Welcome back here on Can't Wait. And the one thing that unifies sports fans across the globe, if your team is not in a particular game, you by default root for the underdog. It's the one thing we all do. So this segment is devoted to our favorite underdogs, inspired by the passing of Dusty Rhodes. Why don't you tell us about that, Matt Milner?
So Dusty Rhodes, one of the great professional wrestlers in history, and certainly one of the great baby faces in history. And his great run came in, you know, mostly through the 80s, during what was the forerunner to WCW, essentially. And he was the great rival of Ric Flair. And Ric Flair, the all-time great heel champion.
Woo!
Exactly. He was, you know, Dusty, what he was famous for was that his whole career was basically the chase. He was always on the cusp of being able to knock off Flair, and then something would happen to conspire against him. There would be interference by one of the other four horsemen, or they'd attack him in the parking lot and break his arm, or, you know, or what became known as the Dusty Finish would happen, which is when you think that the champion has won and the bell rings. I'll back up a little there. The bell rings, and he's, you know, you have the triumphant moment of the babyface holding up the championship belt, only to discover either that night or maybe the next day that there was something that happened to invalidate the result. The ref counted too fast, or, you know, the match had actually already ended because of a DQ or something like that. So you tantalize the fans. That was called the Dusty Finish, not only because it happened to Dusty, but because he invented it as a booker. He was also one of the main bookers of the era. So anyway, Dusty Rhodes passed away this week at an age that I guess in wrestling years was like 150, but in real life years was still very young for a normal person. And we thought that in tribute to one of the great underdogs of all time, that we would talk about some of our favorites.
Why don't you give us your underdog, Rusty?
Okay, this was tough for me, you guys. Coming up with an underdog, I immediately went sports at first, and I loved those Butler teams. I'm from Indiana as a Hoosier. Those Butler teams, coached by Brad Stevens, those were a huge underdog, wonderful games for those national title games.
They united us all against Duke.
Exactly, and they were against Duke, which makes it all better. But ultimately, I went with my favorite underdog of the moment, and it... He may not be an underdog for that much longer, but Bernie Sanders is my favorite underdog right now.
He's being treated like an underdog by the people that cover this stuff professionally, in quotes, but he actually has real support.
And if you listen to him talk, he's the real deal. I mean, he gets everybody excited who listens to him. He's ready to talk real when... Instead of sound bites, he's really ready to talk to you about real stuff. And if he doesn't know, I loved his interview with Diane Rehm, where she asked about assisted suicide for, you know, for elderly people or people who are terminally ill. And he's like, I just don't have enough information right now. I'm not informed enough to tell you about that. And I really thought that was telling, that a politician could say that, because there's not one of the Republicans, and I'm very willing to listen to them. I really want a good Republican person to cheer for, but there's not one of them who's going to tell you, I don't know. They're all going to tell you they know. I love Bernie Sanders and his frankness, and something, part of his underdog appeal too, that's kind of overlooked, is he's old for a presidential candidate, right? I think he's in his 70s, isn't he? I think he's 70, 71.
He's been around
71.
Forever, kind of on the fringes of these conversations, but now he's finally making his run in his early 70s.
And so that makes him an enormous underdog too, and it's something that hasn't been talked about because I think he's got so much vitality. When you hear him talk, he's just so present and so full of energy and life and spunk and believability. I think that in the end, he's going to be very tough for Hillary Clinton to beat. I really think it's going to be tough because she'll continue to move to the left as the debates go on and as he, you know, and she already has. She's already moving to the left, you know, and she's not talking about the trade deal that Obama's trying to push through right now. She's trying to avoid talking about that because
she knows.
Or any of her own voting record, because Bernie Sanders is in direct opposition to that. And people don't realize or remember a lot, but Obama was an underdog when he was fighting against Hillary. And that's a lot of times overlooked. You think of him now just as the president and as this guy with so much power. But he was a definitive underdog going in.
In power circles, it was considered Hillary's turn, and then it was going to be Obama's turn
after
Hillary.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. So he was a real underdog. And I think much like Bernie Sanders, but what's going to happen with Bernie's... I think he ends up beating Hillary, honestly, because I think she's got so many people who have unfavorable views of her. I think that it's going to be really, she's got the same problems that she had in 2008 against Obama, is that people don't trust her. People don't trust the Clintons. And both Clinton and Bush have the name baggage that people right now, that's associated with another time. Bush and Clinton. And I don't know that that's forward thinking enough for people. Even though Bernie Sanders is in his 70s, I think he's forward thinking, and I think he ends up beating Hillary, and he's my favorite underdog at the moment.
So that I think that dovetails kind of nicely into my choice, even though it's a very different realm. And I was thinking a lot about Dusty, and I was thinking about how we touched on the fact that his whole career is marked by the chase. And for these underdogs, it's often more exciting for us to be able to cheer for them chasing the villain than it is for us to enjoy them as the champion. And a lot of the greatest underdogs, they don't actually win. You know, they're fun for March Madness, it's fun to root for them for the first two rounds. But eventually, you know, the talent level or the size or whatever it is, it catches up with them in the run ends.
They wouldn't be underdogs. They would be favorites.
Exactly. Yeah. So I wanted to focus on an underdog who ultimately lost, which I do think will happen to Bernie Sanders, but we'll see. I appreciate your optimism. In any event, I thought back to one of my favorite movies of all time, one of my favorite documentaries, The King of Kong.
Oh, goodness.
Sure.
Yes, indeed.
Fistful of Quarters.
Exactly. So, King of Kong, for those who haven't seen it, it's the story of Billy Mitchell, the greatest villain who's ever lived.
Hot Sauce King.
Hot Sauce King and competitive video game extraordinaire. The movie, it chronicles his reign as champion for Donkey Kong, the old arcade game.
We have a kill screen coming up, Donkey Kong kill screen.
You're ready to audition for a role as a Twin Galaxies referee.
I love that movie.
Yeah. So our protagonist in this movie is Steve Wiebe. And when we meet Steve Wiebe, he has recently been laid off by Boeing. He's now, despite the fact that, you know, he's this brilliant engineer, he's working as a high school science teacher. You know, his wife kind of chronicles the fact that he's someone who's been great at so many things, but for a lot of reasons, some self-inflicted and some just environmental, he's never really been able to accomplish anything great.
Truly self-destructive.
Truly, truly. And so in this moment of despair, when he's just dealing with the sort of failure and frustration of being laid off, he buys a Donkey Kong machine, he puts it in his garage, and he just starts playing Donkey Kong all the time. And Steve Wiebe ultimately breaks Billy Mitchell's record. And
now he's not in Donkey Kong circles either.
Yeah.
This is not received well.
Not received well in the world of competitive Donkey Konging. So in any event, you know, I won't go through the whole plot of the movie, but in essence, you know, even though he has this this victory, it turns out to be momentary for reasons that are, you know, somewhat illegitimate and too complicated to get into. But the bottom line is that the movie is not the story of how Steve Wiebe conquered the villain. It's the movie about, in a lot of ways, it's about why we root for the Steve Wiebes of the world and what their journey looks like, and why, in the face of that adversity, it's despite how hard they work and how much we want them to win, that most of the time they still don't.
Life's just not fair.
Life's just not fair. Billy Mitchell, like, he is easily the easiest person to root against in the history of movies.
He's a complete monster.
And I've heard
one of the great villains ever.
He is one of the great villains ever. And I've actually heard that the director has stated that they really toned down the extent to which he is a monster in the movie.
He was too unlikable in the director's cut.
Yeah. Wow. So they had to like find ways to make him, you know, more almost like cartoonish and make it seem kind of like it was maybe self-effacing or that, you know, he was in on the joke.
Like it was a movie.
Yeah. He is not in on the joke. He's a monster, apparently. I don't know the guy. He might be a really nice guy. Billy Mitchell, if you're listening, send me some hot sauce. We'll say nice things about you. But anyway, it's a great movie. I think everyone should go out and watch it. And it's just a reminder that like Dusty Rhodes, you know, the great underdogs, we cheer for them because they're striving, because they're chasing, even if they don't make it to the finish line.
Now, my underdog, now that's a good one. I had not even considered Steve Wiebe because he's such a total bummer. But
he is a big bummer. Yeah, we got to warn you guys. He is a bummer. He's a sad guy.
But what a great movie. I mean, it just makes me happy to hear you bring it up, right? Yeah. I hadn't thought about that movie.
I think it's
in a little
streaming
bit.
On Netflix still. And if it is, please.
That's great.
Let's all watch it today.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I'm with you.
So my underdog is actually going to tie back into wrestling eventually.
Huh.
But it starts off in the early 90s as a guy hollering into a tape deck because he's kind of a troubled dude. He's got a lot of stuff on his mind. And the only way he's got to get any of it out is to record song after song after song after song after song into a tape deck with no fidelity, no kind of no real technical ability. But John Darnielle spent the large part of the 90s putting down every thought in his head into these tapes that he basically just gave to people. There was not going to be any kind of a pop stardom element to this guy. He sang out of his nose. His songs, they were kind of impenetrable. It was just a ton of words he was throwing at you, but the stories he was writing connected with people because the whole time he was hollering into these tape decks, it was actually America's Best Short Story Writer kind of working out his voice. And so eventually people start taking notice. People who are kind of in those weird Daniel Johnston tape trading circles start getting familiar with this guy who called himself the Mountain Goats, but recorded by himself. So he's got these, if you're a tape trader or a collector, you probably have Bitter Melon Farm, you have Zopilote Machine, you have all these random weird collections of 20, 25 songs where this guy's just pouring everything he's got. But it's not going to sell to anybody. What are you talking about? John Darnielle is going to be one of the biggest songwriters in America at some point. He is right now. If you listen to KXEI, you know the Mountain Goats, because eventually this guy put in a decade plus worth of work doing this no-fi acoustic songwriter thing and eventually found himself in big-time studios because his music connected with people. I think the big breakthrough probably came at All Hail West Texas. Is that when people outside of weird tape circles started to figure out who this guy was? Mm-hmm. The internet starts happening. People are connecting in a way that they don't otherwise connect. I think All Hail West Texas is like early 2000s, mm-hmm. like 2000, 2001. Mm-hmm. Best ever death metal band out of Denton. That's a hit as far as hits like this go.
Right.
He starts finding himself in studios. Is it Tallahassee? Is that the first studio record?
I believe it is, yeah.
It's beautiful. Mm-hmm. It sounds great. And there's this production element that really dovetails nicely. The album really works for him because he's able to put together these songs that tell these whole conceptual stories. Tallahassee is a divorce record, and it's the best divorce record since anything. Probably Blood on the Tracks is probably... That's the one that comes up as the ultimate breakup record. Tallahassee's even darker.
Mm-hmm.
There's We Shall All Be Healed. That is just like the saddest thing you've ever heard. Then there's The Sunset Tree. That's where things jump a level for Don Darnielle. He's no longer like a underdog. He's no longer this guy that is just screaming into the void. He's got an audience. The Sunset Tree is probably one of my 10 favorite records ever made. That thing is just the most raw, honest, dysfunctional childhood, working things out in a therapy session kind of way. You listen to that thing, and if you were ever a kid in America, there's something in that record that speaks so specifically to you because John Darnielle is the most specific writer, not just songwriter, but like actual word guy. And that's word guy. That's me being good at words. That's what he was. And now he's a guy with an audience that anybody that takes music seriously takes him seriously. He's got a book out, The Wolf in the White Van, which I think was nominated for the National Book Award.
Mm-hmm.
This is a guy that is, when he tours, everywhere he tours is packed now. Mm-hmm. He's got a real band with John Worster from The Best Show / Superchunk / Bob Mould / everything. He's like drummer extraordinaire. And his guy Peter, who's been playing bass with him since forever, you go see them live, it's this whole experience. He's like a dark Leonard Cohen who's already pretty dark in the way that, you know, those old Leonard Cohen shows. He would tell these stories between songs, and then the songs would tell these stories. And it'd be this 2.5-hour storytelling thing because this guy was so compelling, you were hanging on his every word. If you've ever seen John Darnielle live, you don't only go see him the once. You see him over and over again because you're seeing a new guy every time. And so it didn't seem like when he was hollering into cassette decks that we were going to have like our generation's Bob Dylan on our hands. But John Darnielle, who's just put out a record about wrestling, underdogs.
That I love.
It's
I love
so
that
good.
Album. Mm-hmm. It's so good.
And so the ultimate underdog writes one of his best records about underdogs, and it ties back into who we're paying tribute to this week, Dusty Rhodes. And that's my guy, John Darnielle, all-timer. Can't get enough of them.
Beat the Champ, one of the great albums that's been released recently. Wolfman Gimmick, song number 9 on that album. I was listening to it as I was driving in. I love that song. Yeah. That song's so cool.
I feel like that now that we live in an era where the legend of Chavo Guerrero can be like kind of an indie hit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that can get on Stereo Gum, and like that can be a song that kids put on mixtapes for each other.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
He's got a song about Bruiser Brody's death. That's so cool.
And so that's my guy. He's the champ. He rose. He did it the right way. He came from, there was no commercial aspiration, and now here he is. And I think we're going to strive to do that for you here on Can't Wait. Right now, we're just hollering into the void. We don't know who's listening, but eventually, maybe 12 years down the line, we're going to be the biggest syndicated show this station has ever seen.
Watch out, Jim Rome.
God, that guy's the worst. I'll say it. Who cares? That guy's a garbage dump.
He's not listening.
So. Yeah, he's not listening. I don't think we're worried about our careers.
But what we're going to do is plug some of the stuff that we have going on outside of this. So, Rusty, what's happening on the current this week?
Well, after a crazy show with Mick and Scott that was really offbeat and different and
the only way it
fun,
could be.
The only way it could be. It was perfect for my birthday show. This week's going to be a complete 180. I've got Kareema Walker on my show this week.
Oh, Kareema's the best.
I have yet to meet her, actually. Andy and I from Human Behavior were talking, and he's like, oh, you've got to have Kareema on. And I love her EP. I love the work she does with the band. And so she's going to be my guest, and I imagine it's going to be a really good show.
That was a real, like, joy sound I made when you did that. That's awesome. I'll be tuning in. So, Matt Milner, Locals Only, what's going on?
You know, I don't think we have a live guest this week. I think we had a cancellation, move things around a little bit, but it's an excuse to go onto the KXEI website, listen to some old podcasts that we have up there. We've got, you know, all the live performances up there at KXEI.org. Find the Locals Only page. You can do it right after you listen to this show, because if you're listening, you're already on the KXEI website. There's no other way. So it's just a couple
halfway
clicks
there.
Away. You're halfway there. So go back and listen to one of the old ones.
There's literally no excuse. If you don't do it, you're a bad person.
The only excuse is that you don't like it, and I can live with that.
Okay,
if that's your excuse, I'm okay with that.
That's honest.
Yeah, I'm fine with that. You can tell me that.
Side Streets Podcast is new this week with comic book artist Frank Powers. He came on to talk about Ticked Off Panda. That's how we'll clean it up for this. And I've never seen anybody work as hard on anything as Frank is working on that. And it was really cool to get to talk to him about how serious he is about what he's doing. And
It's apparent. Just I don't know him either, but we're friends on Facebook and I see his work and stuff. And he's really putting in the time. He's really putting in the effort. I think it's a really interesting interview, I imagine.
When you see what he's doing and you listen to how he talks about it, there's really no excuse for anybody else. If you have a creative endeavor that you want to embark upon, you have to do it. There's no excuse. He is showing you how hard you have to work. And yeah, that might be your excuse. You don't want to work that hard. Be honest about it. But that's ultimately what we talk about. Just how hard it is to start a thing and how hard it is to maintain a thing, but how necessary it is in order to see that thing through.
Cool.
So that's a good one. And that's going to do it for us here on Can't Wait. And we're going to keep doing this until someone tells us not to.